Good morning. We thank you for tuning into our radio program today. This program is brought to you each Sunday morning by the Parkway Church of Christ here in Bowling Green. We're always encouraged when we hear of those who are tuning in and listening, studying the Bible using this medium. So we appreciate you doing that. We mainly appreciate your interest in spiritual things and Bible study. Now, it could be that you're interested in the program and you listen to it, but that you have specific questions about things that we have taught or about other Bible-related subjects. And want you to know we would be happy to address those. We can do that in two different ways. Really, there are several different ways. But we think in terms of expediency, if you would like for us to address a particular topic using this platform, using the radio, we'll be happy to do that. Just let us know, and I'll give you the contact information directly, and you can let us know and send us your request. Or if you would prefer to meet together and study something more directly, privately, we'll be happy to make arrangements that are comfortable for everyone. And it's been a while since I have commented on this, but of course we want to be wise. We want to be careful. I will not meet privately with a woman. It's preferable that we have someone else present, and so we can just make arrangements to accommodate that, whether it be me bringing my wife with me, if it is a female I'm meeting with, or whatever we need to do to make it more comfortable. I've always said before that it's possible that if you have a Bible question you want to study, maybe your spouse also has that, someone else in your family, and we can have a group study. And I do assure you that our sole focus will be simply to determine what the Bible means by what it says. And so we're not interested in quibbling. We're not interested in arguing. If we reach a point where it is obvious that one or the other of us simply cannot see something the other way, we'll drop that subject. If we need to move on to something else, we'll do that. If that means that our study is over, then that's what we will have to do. But our goal, our purpose, is to open our minds. I want to open my mind, and I want you to open yours if we have such a study as that. And by mutual concern for truth, out of respect for one another, we should be able to have a good and productive Bible study. So please keep this in mind. That's a standing offer, not just for this week. It's a standing offer. So if you need to contact us for those things, or if you're interested in attending our worship services, which would be the other way that something can be addressed. It can be brought up in a class situation, even if we are studying some other text or some other topic. No one at Parkway would be offended or upset if we were to devote time to a question that you might have in a Bible class. So we would conduct ourselves decently and in order, but we would be happy to address that question, even if we had other plans of study for that day. So you can do that, and we meet together at the building located at 125 Hilltopper Avenue. Now, if you want to contact us, that's the physical location, but if you want to contact us, just add 42101 for the zip code, and you can mail us if you have a Bible question or want to express some concern. Parkway Church of Christ, 125 Hilltopper Avenue, Bowling Green, Kentucky, 42101. You can also contact us now, and let me go ahead and throw this in while I'm thinking about it. You can also contact us by email going to our website, parkwaychurchofchrist.com, and look for the email form there and email us, or call us at area code 270-842-2049. We'll be happy to make arrangements with you. Let me continue with our schedule of services. We meet Sunday mornings at 9 o'clock for Bible classes, then at 10 o'clock on Sunday mornings for worship, 6 o'clock Sunday evenings for worship, and Bible study on Wednesday evenings at 7 o'clock. Back about 3 weeks ago, maybe 4 weeks ago, I preached a sermon on effeminacy, and I wanted to upload that program to the website, but I had some things where I commented on some sort of side points, and I wanted just a straight direct study on this for web purposes. So this morning I'm going to address that subject of effeminacy and do it in a way that I'll be comfortable for that to be posted on the World Wide Web without making any references to church members or others who might have whose names might have come up in the study. So I want to take a look at this subject. The reason I think we need to study the subject is because of just how much of an explosion there has been in the acceptance, just a general overall acceptance of effeminacy because of how this relates to transgenderism. And you've heard the expression about people being open-minded. If people say, well, I just want to be open-minded on that. Maybe it's a genetic problem, kind of like they say about homosexuality. And by the way, don't ignore the obvious. The close relationship between transgenderism and homosexuality. So that ought to be a little concerning to begin with when these topics come up for discussion. But you remember the old adage on this about open-mindedness. You don't want to be so open-minded that your brain falls out on the ground. That's too open-minded. We need to be open-minded, but of course our first objective needs to be to have a love for the truth. The question is, what does God say about this? So I want us to think it's a worthy study. What does effeminacy mean? Well, if you look it up in a standard dictionary, you'll have a definition something like the quality in a man of having characteristics and ways of behaving traditionally associated with women and regarded as inappropriate for a man. And I wanted to be specific and elaborate on the standard dictionary definition by adding to that, defining some of those typical ways or female characteristics that men appropriate. For example, you have a tone in speech change, a certain cadence. Sometimes you'll hear men who are trying to act like women have a certain cadence of speech that is more like, and I always thought it was kind of funny, more like a teenage girl. But typically then and generally more like women. Often you'll see long hair, makeup, accented fingernails. I'm seeing more and more of that where men are painting their fingernails. So they have women's fingernails. And women's clothing, obviously. Women's clothing. And not just women's clothing, but their mannerisms, trying to walk more like a female, move more like a female, and that type of thing. So when you think of effeminacy, that's what you're talking about. And the Bible explicitly condemns effeminacy. Over in 1 Corinthians chapter 6 and verse 9, Paul said, "Know you not that the unrighteous shall not inherit the kingdom of God?" When I say condemns, it says here they will not go to heaven. So this makes this a very crucial, a very critical topic, one that we need to understand and be able to take a stand on. So he says, and he has several categories here of sinners. He says, "Be not deceived, neither fornicators, nor idolaters, nor adulterers, nor effeminate, nor abusers of themselves with mankind." That's the old King James, which most of the newer versions have their homosexuals. "Nor thieves, nor covetous, nor drunkards, nor revilers, nor extortioners shall inherit the kingdom of God." Now let me point out, and you may be reading from a Bible right now that only has one word for the two Greek words that break down into effeminate and then homosexuals. And I have tried to figure out why this is done, but a lot of times you'll have translations that combine those. I will explain the problem with that here right now. You have two different Greek words. You have the word malakos. that is translated effeminate. And these two different Greek words, the one for effeminate and the one for homosexuals, are not the same word. And they do not need to be combined necessarily. They stand for, they have their own unique, different definitions, and those need to be considered in this context. So the first one means soft. Of course, it's used in a metaphorical way here. It's used in a moral sense. But it means soft. And that, you know, that really makes sense that they would translate this effeminate. That is an appropriate translation of this Greek word malakos, no doubt about that. So where else do we see this in the Bible? We see it in Matthew chapter 11 and verse 8 twice, when it says, what Jesus asked, what then did you go out to see, that is out in the wilderness to see? Did you go out to see a man dressed in soft clothing? Behold, those who wear soft clothing are in kings' houses. So here it's used of soft in reference to clothing or cloth. Soft clothing, he says, that typically characterizes those who are in kings' houses because it was more expensive and not common material. But in 1 Corinthians 6:9, it's the same Greek word, but it's used metaphorically, and of course then, and friends, obviously, in a bad sense, it has to be a bad sense of usage, because he said those who commit these things will not inherit the kingdom of God. So, what does it mean? We know the next word means homosexuals. Homosexuals. Well, the word malakos means soft. So it means a man who acts like a woman. Now here's the important part of this. This can be to varying degrees. A man might act like a woman. He might put on a woman's dress. He might fix his hair like a woman. He might wear makeup and fix his fingernails like a woman. He might try to talk like a woman, as I mentioned before. He may change his tone and his cadence. In fact, there are drugs today and hormones that can facilitate in that, and people are constantly using those males in order to become like women. So the question is, does this necessarily involve sex? And I've noticed, I read a lot of commentaries on this subject, and I noticed that there are a lot of people, and also read some articles online, and you're reading there and you notice that they seem to always make this sexual. It is not. It can be. It can be, because it can be sexual all the way to the point of Leviticus chapter 18 and verse 22, or Leviticus 20 and verse 13, where it talks of a man lying down sexually with a man as he would with a woman. And the next passage in the Leviticus 20 chapter, verse 13, prescribed in the Old Testament the death penalty for that. So it could be that. It has been used in the past of male prostitutes, of catamites. So it can go that far. The question is, and this is why, you know, this needs to be thought out a little bit, why is it that so many people are pushing for this to only be sexual? I think it's because the problem has already developed to the point that you have so many people who know people who are transgender or who are transitioning that they're beginning to compromise on this. The word does not necessarily inhere the idea of sex, but the practice, the behavior certainly lends itself towards perverse sex. So what I'm saying is it's both. Depending upon its use, depending upon the circumstance, the word is both. It could be a man who has not, he acts like a woman, he dresses like a woman, but he has not had or engaged in illicit sexual relations. Maybe even he believes that illicit sexual relations would be wrong. but he believes it's okay for him to act and look and behave and talk like a woman. No, my point is, this verse condemns that also. So I think some people are consoling themselves with this notion that this word always only involves sexual relations. No, it does not. The word has its own meaning. It is a standalone word. The proof, friends, proof of the fact that malakos is a standalone use word is the passage in Matthew chapter 11 and its parallel in Luke 7:25, where it's used of soft in reference to clothing. There's nothing sexual about those passages. He's just using the word in its basic meaning of soft. But what if you use it of a man being soft? Well, that's a man acting like and possibly behaving like a woman. So it could be a homosexual. It could be one who has a, as one translation translates this, the passive role in homosexuality, the passive role in it. So I wanted to make sure that was clear. The word has its own meaning, separate from, though often related to, homosexuality. So my point is, this verse also condemns a man acting like, dressing like, behaving like, talking like a woman. That is inappropriate. The Old Testament talked about this, and you know, I know what some will say. They'll say, well, you don't you say at other times on other programs we are not under the Old Testament? No, we're not. That's true. We are not under the Old Testament law. But often the Old Testament speaks of things that the New Testament also speaks on, like modesty or immodesty, or the woman's place in being in subjection to the man, limitations for her role in worship, 1 Corinthians 14, where it says that the women are to remain silent in the churches, as also saith the law. So sometimes principles are more universal, and you certainly have that with this. In Deuteronomy chapter 22 and verse 5, a woman shall not wear a man's garment, nor shall a man put on a woman's cloak, for whoever does these things is an abomination to the Lord your God. So what is condemned here? Well, role mixing. This is a man trying to act like and look like a woman, or a woman who's trying to act and look like a man. That is condemned in the Bible. That is condemned. And by the way, the New Testament comes along and separates the roles of men and women and makes additional points about these distinctions, as we will see. For example, in 1 Corinthians chapter 11. 1 Corinthians 11 in verses 14 and 15, Paul said that it was effeminate for a man to wear his hair like a woman. It was inappropriate. Does not even nature itself teach you that if a man has long hair, it is a dishonor to him? But if a woman has long hair, it is a glory to her, for her hair is given to her for a covering. Often it's pointed out that this is in a context of a certain custom, but the fact remains that Paul shows this distinction and says that nature even teaches us certain things. We acknowledge that cultural practices do vary with regard to gender identity and hair length, but Paul made a distinction between what was generally characteristic of women versus men with regard to hair length. 1 Corinthians 4. Why say it at all if that's not true? You know, it scares me a little bit, it worries me that some, even of my own brethren, completely disregard this passage by invoking the idea of custom. Well, do we not have a custom today in this country? Do not most countries have customs about women's hair versus men's hair? Yes, they do. Now, there may be certain communities, for example, in the transgender community, or in the gay community, or other progressive, liberal progressive communities of people who do not operate by a biblical worldview, where you have some different customs there. But typically, it's the same way today, and we need to appreciate that simple fact. What about a man acting like a woman when his role as a man is to be a man, in the role of a protector? It's amazing how many times in the Old Testament, for example, in Isaiah 19:16, this point is made. Isaiah 19:16 says, "In the day that the Egyptians will be like women, and tremble with fear before the hand that the Lord of hosts shakes over them." Or in Jeremiah chapter 51 and verse 30, "The warriors of Babylon have ceased fighting. They remain in their strongholds. Their strength has failed. They've become women." Become women? "Her dwellings are on fire. Her bars are broken." And also in chapter 50 and verse 37 of Jeremiah, and in Nahum chapter 3 and verse 13, the minor prophet. Equal references can be found about men becoming women. Now, this doesn't mean they, you know, per modern vernacular, they like transitioned into a woman. It means they were men, but they were acting like women. And these verses all condemn that. In fact, they are so condemned that God was judging their whole nations because their men had become like women. Or at least that was one of the problems with them. Their men had become like women. Friends, you can check that in your own Bible in Isaiah 19:16, Jeremiah 51, verse 30. Look at the cross-reference and see the other passages. So what is the point? Well, the point is that the men, the Egyptian men and the Babylonian men, became like women in their fear and trembling in the face of resistance of real men. Resistance brought on by real men. That is, men who were what? Strong, brave, in these verses, militant. They were women in their reluctance to fight or in hiding from danger. It says remaining in their strongholds. So, keep these verses in mind. The Bible makes a distinction between the role of the men and the role of the women. 1 Corinthians 16:13 teaches that courage and bravery are characteristically male qualities. Paul told the Christians, "Be watchful, stand firm in the faith, act like men, be strong." Now, I have cautioned people about this. Some have used this per se as an effeminacy verse. It is not. It is actually a courage verse. It's not an effeminacy verse because Paul in this book had been repeatedly back and forth speaking to women just as he had been speaking to men. There were both males and females that composed and comprised the church at Corinth. And clearly the instructions in chapters 11 and 14 that were directly to women prove this. And so Paul, when he told Christians in general, men and women, to be watchful, to stand firm in the faith, to act like men, be strong, he's not telling, wouldn't this verse be a little counterproductive if it was intended as an effeminacy verse? Because you would actually have Paul telling women here to behave like men, to act like men. No. But he is making a point about courage. He's telling the men and women, male and female Christians at Corinth, to be what? To be spiritually brave. To be spiritually strong. He's not even here talking about the physical characteristics of either one of them. He's not talking about the physical when he said be strong. He's talking about the moral. He's talking about the spiritual. So there's a right way to use 1 Corinthians 16:13, and obviously there is a dangerously wrong way to use it. But it does make the point about bravery typically being a manly quality. We can use the verse to make that point. 1 Timothy 5:8 teaches that men are primarily responsible for providing for their families. Paul said, "But if anyone does not provide for his own, and especially those of his own household, He's denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. In Ephesians 5, in verse 29, Paul told the men there to love their wives. And as he elaborated on their responsibility to love their wives, he talked about the nourishing and cherishing. Nourishing and cherishing. Cherishing responsibility. You may remember, if you heard the program last week, how I used this verse to make the point about self-protection and self-respect. The man who is willing to honor, protect, to help, to assist, to provide for his wife is one who also respects himself. So that's why Paul said, no man ever yet hated his own flesh, but nourishes and cherishes. Well, but he's talking about the responsibility the man has in context there to his wife. So don't miss the point there. But what is the point for our purposes today? Well, it's pretty clear. Paul shows that men have this response. This is in the role of a man, not of a woman. But this has some serious moral and spiritual implications. We've talked about the moral a little bit because we started out the context of 1 Corinthians chapter 6 and verse 9. The effeminate will not inherit the kingdom of heaven, along with adulterers and fornicators and homosexuals. So the man who acts like, dresses like, speaks like, makes his face up like, he puts on woman's face. Every time I think about this verse, of course, we think of that young man who became so central in all of this in media, and particularly in social media, and you may remember the fallout with the Bud Light using Dylan Mulvaney for the purpose, the transgender guy, using him for the purpose of promoting their Bud Light product. And it was disastrous for them. But every time I think about this, I think about his commercial where he was prancing around in the rain with an umbrella and mud puddles, and I thought, what a foolish individual. That was his concept, his view of what it was to be like to be a woman. But I don't even see women doing that. So he's not a woman. He doesn't have female DNA, and he's out there. He's just basically projecting some definition of what a woman is and then trying to fill that role. So it was sad and sick. But there are some spiritual consequences of this as well. For example, when it comes to being an elder, and by the way, the term elder is used interchangeably with the word bishop and with the word pastor, all of them emphasizing different aspects of the role of the elder. In the New Testament. And if you want the passage for that, Acts chapter 20, verse 17, this group of men are called elders. This group of men is called elders. Later in verse 28, they are called pastors and overseers. The terms are used interchangeably. So, you know, a lot of these denominational preachers don't understand that, and they call themselves pastor. Basically unscripturally. Now, a preacher might also be a pastor, but in order to be a pastor or an elder, he must meet the qualifications of 1 Timothy chapter 3, verses 1 through 7, and Titus chapter 1, verses 6 through 9. So that's another issue. Elders must be men, 1 Timothy chapter 3 and verse 2, if any be the husband of one wife. Deacons must be men, same point. It references their wives. Preachers must be men. 1 Timothy 2, verse 12. Paul said he did not allow a woman to preach or exercise authority over a man. The heads of households must be men. Ephesians 5 and verse 23. So friends, effeminacy violates these principles and violates the roles of men and women. Our time is up today. We thank you for tuning in. We hope you tune in next week for another study. Until then, we bid you a pleasant good day.